It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
Okay, hello again, everybody. Patrick Johnson here. It is nice to have you with us on this Monday. Hope it was a great weekend for you. Mixed bag, beautiful day on Saturday, but rainy and cold and nasty on Monday or Sunday. Just chilly today. Okay, great to have you along. We have Cliff Godwin coming up in just a few minutes. Steve and Igo and I spoke Cliff earlier, so we'll bring that to you as we'll go inside the ECU clubhouse. We'll have a pirate report, of course, and our general fun and frivolity and things that we have going on this Monday. Philip the Ref Pilkington producing the show, as always. Pilk will be here tomorrow. I have an assignment, as they say. And so I'll be off to carry that assignment out, and Pilk is going to be hosting in the Hizzle tomorrow. Pilk, how are you?
I'm good, Patrick. How are you?
Good. Doing well. Big win for the Pirates. They sweep Wichita State over the weekend at home, rallied in both games of the Saturday doubleheader, and Coach Godwin amazed at the comeback on Saturday, one time being down 7 runs. Pirates will host NC State tomorrow at 6. It is a sellout officially for that one tomorrow. You could, of course, listen to it right here at beginning at 5:45 on 94.3 The Game and the IBX Media app. Track and field wrapped up its regular season yesterday for spring season, and that was Friday and Saturday at the Wake Forest Invitational and Aggie Classic. Cindy McMillan, the highlight of the weekend, set the program's 100 hurdles record, demolished it, in fact, on Friday, and then promptly reset it again on Saturday. How about that? Pirate softball gets a big series win over the weekend, splitting a Saturday doubleheader with South Florida after they rallied to win on Friday night against USF. And lacrosse got a win at home to wrap up the home portion of their slate, 11-10 over ODU. You know what caught my attention from the weekend before we get into some other headlines, Pilk? Was
Scotty Scheffler embarrassing everybody else who's ever picked up a golf club?
That. But Carmani McClain. So he's a 5-star recruit and was a big get for Deion Sanders, Neon Deion, and the Colorado program last year, right? He's a corner. And so he got into the portal, right? And he was posting a video. I think it had something to do with like his workout regimen, but he also was taking questions from Instagram. Now, this wasn't some great production like this high-dollar production we put on here on our video side with graphics where, you know, sometimes if I'll take questions from my Insta account or my DMs or whatever, and they'll, you know, superimpose the graphics on the screen with the question, or you know, even do a screenshot of you know, what is emailed or DM'd or asked on Instagram. It was him reading it from his phone, which is fine. And he first he kind of talked about, you know, what he was looking to do and what kind of led to the decision and all of this. And it started off nice enough.
What are some things you're looking forward to at your next place? What are some things you're looking forward to at your next place? I'm just ready to bring an old version of me out and change the narrative of everyone's thinking on my name. Be a part of a real and a great program that's going to impact me at my best ability. And yeah, ready to get to a new place and get to work.
So did you pick up on just the tiniest little slight there, Pilk? The tiny little slight in that? That was his first answer. I mean, obviously a decent enough answer, but did you pick up on that little slight?
Yeah, he's saying that Coach Prime is not running a real program at Boulder.
A real program. But, you know, it was very quick. If you weren't paying attention, if you were just kind of concentrating on the message as a whole, there's nothing wrong with that message, is there?
No.
I mean, that. What do you expect a guy to say that was a five-star recruit? He addressed his academics. He said he's an AB student. Wonderful. You know, all these things. And then it got to this answer where he really wasn't answering a question. He was just sort of trailing on from one, it looked like, clip to the other, and then he fired with this.
I feel like I just don't want to play for the Clips. I actually want to be involved with a great leading program that's going to develop players.
I don't want to play for Clicks. I love it. That's a shot. That's a shot. I don't want to play for Clicks. He wants to go somewhere where he will develop. Listen to it again.
I feel like I just don't want to play for Clicks. I actually want to be involved with a great leading program that's going to develop players.
I love it. I love it. What do you think, Pilk? Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, it's... There's a lot of controversy as to whether Deion's there for fame and fortune or whether he's there to win championships. And record last year reflected that they're there to play for Clicks. We'll see what happens this year. But it's I'm sure someone on the inside has more of an view on the truth than any of the rest of us.
I think Deion is obviously there to get out of this to the next level, which is NFL. That's where I think Deion's trying to get to, is the NFL, to be a head coach. But I don't know if that would, I don't know if and it's to be determined if the shtick, I love the Coach Prime thing. I think it's hilarious. And I love this because it's a little T. It's got a little phase of T to it, right? But it's old school and Prime and new school and this kid. We'll see if Prime replies. I love it, though. I think that's great. Awesome stuff. Baylor basketball got a big recruit out of the portal this weekend. Jeremy Roach is championship chasing. He had a year of eligibility because he's one of those COVID guards. Of course, he played at Duke. Had a pretty solid senior year, 14 points, 3 assists. I know some Blue Devil fans felt like it was not a great thing for him to come back. Some Blue Devil fans were hoping that he had come back because, he'd been a steady presence. Wasn't like he's got really huge prospects to be a pro. I think he realizes that. So what does he do? He goes somewhere where he'll obviously get some NIL. And he'll go somewhere where he is going to be playing on a team that will probably be one of the top two or three seeds in whatever region they're in the NCAA dance next year. I'm not mad at it. Guy wants to chase a ship. No problem with it. Your Carolina Hurricanes are hoping to take a commanding lead in their first-round series against the New York Islanders. The Canes top the Isles 3-1. First game of their best-of-seven series. They'll look to go up 2-0 when they host Game 2 at the PNC Arena tonight. Last time Carolina made the playoffs but unable to advance past the first round was 2001. That might have just been the kiss of death for them. I thought they handled the Islanders pretty easily, though. I know there was the constant complaints of the officiating, which there always are in the playoffs. But I thought, even though it was 2-1 for much of the game, I thought it was kind of a no doubt. Carolina was the better team. And then Pilk touched on this. The RBC Heritage wrapped up today. Scotty Scheffler, the winner, down in South Kakalak. Play was suspended yesterday due to darkness after heavy rains caused delays, and it was finished this morning. Scheffler's now won two events in a row after winning the Masters the week before. He's won four of his last five starts on the PGA Tour. Now, and we love having Maul on. I think he gives good information. This Zurich Classic, is this the one with the team format down in New Orleans? It is. Or is that in Texas later?
I can't remember. They've changed it up so much. I can look it up.
I don't think we're going to talk about the Zurich Classic this week unless we just need some content. Because, I mean, to me, it just screams of Andrew Catalan doing the play-by-play, and that means it's not a big event. It's actually like a sub-event if he's doing the play-by-play and not Nance. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would. There's a LIV tournament this week. Be a little...
Where's
nighttime
that?
TV for us. They're down under in Australia.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And that'll be on the CW?
Yeah, it will.
Okay. When does that, I guess, is that a Thursday, Friday, Saturday deal?
I think for us it is. I think it might be Friday, Saturday, Sunday for them. I got to look it up. I looked at it a few weeks back.
Got you. Well, I'm gonna watch it. I'm always here for primetime golf. Look, I have a lot of compliments have been paid to me over the weekend. Such things as, Patrick, you're quite handsome. Man, what a voice. You're a talent. All these things. I Pilk, by this time, it's old hat. But the new one has been, hey, you look great. Keep up the good work, losing weight. How are you doing it? That sort of thing. And there's a way you could do this without drugs, without injections. It's a healthy way to do it. It's East Carolina Weight Loss. And the secret to losing a pound of fat every day, naturally, safely, you don't have to do it by counting points or counting calories. Don't have to exercise, even though I try to take a good walk at least every day, if not every day, every other day. No prepackaged meals. There's no drugs involved, no surgery, and no injections that have the risky side effects. I was talking to somebody last week. They had been on the injections. They had some real problems with it, so they got off because of just the way the injections were impacting their health. Visit EastCarolinaWeightLoss.com now. You can schedule your free consultation. You got a spot there to mention that I was the one you heard it from. 252-496-3610 if you're more old school and like to have that one-on-one interaction. 252-496-3610 or eastcarolinaweightloss.com. You can lose 20 to 30 pounds in a month or two. Call for your free weight loss consultation now or online, eastcarolinaweightloss.com. That's eastcarolinaweightloss.com. Okay, we're going to go inside the Pirate Clubhouse. ECU with a 4-0 week, up to number 7 in the D1 baseball polls. We'll welcome NC State tomorrow night. Let's take a timeout, come back, and Coach CG joins Igo and myself next.
You ready for this?
Oh, I'm very ready.
Okay, ready?
You ready?
Streaming to the world at 943thegame.com. This is the Patrick Johnson Show. Now in all his glory, here's the P-Man.
Pirate baseball coming off the doubleheader sweep and sweep of Wichita State, plus that epic game in Colonial Williamsburg last week, and Cliff Godwin joins us here. Steve and I go, Patrick Johnson with you as we talk Pirate baseball, as we do on Mondays during the season with Coach. Cliff, congratulations. Nice week for the team, and boy, it all started with a kind of a record game in many respects, and a lengthy game where you guys had to thwart off a really game William and Mary team several times before getting the victory.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever been a part of a game like that before. 5.5 hours, really hard to get strikes called. I think we struck out 22 guys, and only one was struck out looking. So that's probably a record of some capacity. But the message, to our guys was, it wasn't pretty, but our guys just continued to fight. I think that was the things you saw on Saturday as well, getting behind twice, obviously one time 7-0. I mean, our guys just continue to show grit and fight and determination. And we had Bible study this morning, and we always go around and talk about one thing we're thankful for. I'm thankful that our guys don't panic when we get down, and they have a lot of confidence, and they just go about their business and go up there and win pitches. And for us to be able to respond with 5 runs with 2 outs, in that inning, the third inning, I mean, that was the game, in my opinion, because then Wichita State was like, oh, my goodness, like they're right back in it.
It's never ideal to fall behind, especially by a lot of runs. But there is something about this team that they seem pretty comfortable playing in close games or even having to play in a come-from-behind fashion. Why is that?
Well, I think it comes from our leadership group, of course. I think they instill a lot of confidence in other guys on our team. I think the hard work we put in the fall, Carter Cunningham mentioned that. I mean, I had a text from Kurt Morgan this morning and goes, Saturday, that's why you do all the hard stuff in the fall, is because of games like Saturday and you fall behind. And you just have a bunch of determined individuals and a team that just goes, hey, man, we've been through a lot of hard stuff in the fall and we can handle this. And that's the thing that, you know, makes me proud to be the leader of this organization, is that they show toughness, they show fight, even when, you know, some teams might just say, hey, man, it's not our day, and just lose the game.
Cliff, going back to Tuesday's game, have you ever seen a strike zone that tight? And then how do you handle it kind of like after the game with the pitchers? Cause, and make sure it doesn't, I don't know, affect their confidence because they're throwing strikes maybe that aren't called strikes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's tough to see exactly where the pitches are when you're in the third base dugout. We obviously knew that there were some close pitches that we felt like we should have gotten. If you ever see J-Dub, like, grab his mask, kind of, you know, but he J-Dub does it very subtly so the umpire doesn't get showed up. But if he does that, then J-Dub said that means it's a strike. If he touches his chest protector to us, that means it was off the plate a little bit. So J-Dub grabbed his mask a lot during that game. but the umpire was extremely nice. So I guess that's one of the reasons I didn't get thrown out. But no, I didn't know how, I mean, the 3-2 Schenkman pitch, and look, nobody's perfect, but we've all been out there at that point in time, probably over 3 hours, and he throws a slider, a 3-2 count that would have ended the game. I just don't know how we missed that pitch. But other than that, you know, it is the game of baseball, and you can't control those types of things. So you just go out there and continue to scrap and claw. And of course, it came down to the last pitch for us to be able to win that game. But getting guys out there in those situations when you're forced to, like Corey Costello, Eric Ritchie again, Parker Thomas, and others in those crucial moments, I mean, our hand was kind of forced because everybody else had pitched. Well, that's just going to pay dividends down the road. DiLorenzo, too, I mean, threw two innings and was one strike away from us, I think, winning it in the 11th, and he just hit a guy with the bases loaded. So the more we can get those guys out there, it's going to benefit us down the road.
Cliff, I do want to commend you, too. I feel like that would have been a game in the earlier part of your coaching career. Maybe you get ejected. And hey, to this point, no ejections for Cliff Godwin. And, what, three reviews in the game three of the Wichita State series? I mean, it was just kind of crazy week.
It was two because I only get two. Okay. Also, you know, got warned in game one. And initially, the crew chief told me, who had third base, he goes, that was unsportsmanlike conduct, so you can't come back out here anymore. I said, I've never heard this. So if I want to ask a question, I can't come out the dugout. Who do I send out there? Like, what are we talking about? And then he talked to the home plate umpire and said, it's just a warning. So you can still come out and talk, but, you know, you can't, you know, chirp anything else. And I was like, all right, cool. So I survived that.
I'm proud of you, Cliff. Keep it going, man.
Hey, you should be. I mean, look, we've been how many games? Almost 40 games I've been thrown out once. So this might have been my longest track record of my career. So I'm in uncharted waters, PJ.
We'll knock on wood to keep it going for you.
Yeah. It's all good.
I do want to ask you, Coach, just Friday's game, Treya Savage, man, is just absolute lights out, 15 Ks. Just watching that from the dugout, what was, I don't know, your biggest takeaway from watching Trey?
Well, AK came in the dugout, you know, right before Trey's going to take the mound, and he goes, hey, man, he's juiced up tonight. And I just didn't put two and two together. AK normally doesn't say, hey, anybody looks great or they're bad. We just go about our business the same way each game. But for him to say that, it just kind of, I was like, okay. But I didn't think about last year, you know, he was dealing with that arm soreness, and with all the travel issues we had, we actually, the first game was on Saturday, so he had an extra day's rest. But, you know, Trey probably wasn't as honest with us about how his arm felt, but he goes out there in the first inning against Wichita, and I think his best fastball might have gusted 92, and it was cold, and he didn't strike out anybody and give up two runs. And I go, AK, we got to take him out of the game. He's not right, and we're not going to risk that. So we set him down. So I'm sure that was in the back of Trey's mind, which I did not put two and two together until after the game. But, man, he was special. And when he knew that our bullpen was thin, he just went out there and said, hey, man, you're not going to score runs off me. And, you know, JC and I talked about it, but he should have made that play in the outfield. He gives up one run at the most and goes seven in and punches out 15. But the first six innings is the dominant performances I've ever watched at Clark LeClair Stadium.
We're talking Pirate baseball, Coach Cliff Godwin. The other thing, and you noted this, and if you think back on it, I think your point of he approaches it like a closer. Whenever there's traffic, whenever there's runners on, it seems like your Savage gets that much better and gets that much more dialed in and tougher.
Yeah, if you get to second and third base and there's traffic, especially in scoring position, he turns it up a notch and he becomes a closer for that inning, which is special. You can't teach that. That's internal competitive nature, and Trey's got that.
Ethan Norby continues his really run here of some special weeks over the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I mean he's developing into that proverbial Swiss Army knife for you.
He sure is. You know, the plan wasn't for him to have to close out the game on Friday, of course, but he was one of the only guys that did not pitch on Tuesday, and so we knew they had a bunch of lefties in the lineup, and Norby's really good against lefties, but we wanted to win the game. That was the most important thing. So he goes out there and, you know, he looks the part. It's not just that he's having success, but he's gotten his confidence back from earlier in the season. And man, he's filling up the strike zone with two really good pitches, and his location is good. And he's been definitely a spark plug for us coming out of that bullpen.
To sweep a doubleheader, Coach, got to have a lot of guys step up, and definitely y'all did that on Saturday. And several players off the bench, several relievers as well. Just maybe highlight some of those guys a little bit.
Yeah, you know, looking at their third starter, you know, his splits were a little bit, you know, when I say they were better versus right-handed hitters didn't hit him as good. So, you know, after Bristol ran into the wall and then there was a play in left field that I thought that normally he makes the catch. And just with all those things, I just thought it was best to get him out of the game and put Clonch in the game. And Clonch, man, had an awesome day, of course. And he's just been a great teammate and a great leader in our locker room. So super proud to be able to see him do that. And then, you know, to start the game, Nowak was in the DH spot because I felt like Nowak was a good matchup. And Nowak's practices and his BPs have been a lot more like they were a year ago. He's more in the middle of the field, and actually his first two at bats he hit balls hard, just had a little bit too much height of air underneath him, and then his third at bat he had a single, and I thought he played well. I thought everybody at the bullpen, you know, went to Jaden Winter early, he got an inning. I think Aaron Groller was right after him too. Jake Hunter got an inning, and then I can't remember who came in after him.
Kaler
looked unbelievable in the seventh. And then we had a long inning offensively, and I think that kind of affected him a little bit. And then we had to go to Shankman, and then Shankman did shank. So, you know, gets bases loaded, no outs, and then doesn't give up a run. So he's special, of course, to have at the back end of that game.
Huge week for Joey Verini. He has the, you know, the game time hit at William and Mary, which feels like it was like 3 years ago now. But also had the home runs, Coach, big home runs in both of the games this weekend to really change both those games. Just how good was it to see Joey hit those, you know, clutch at bats, which we've seen plenty in the past.
You know, I don't get on Igo's message board, but I'm sure there's been people that have, you know, questioned, you know, why Joey isn't swinging the bat well. And I wish people just understood like what he went through with his wrist, having a broken bone. I mean, you know, when you start messing with wrists, fingers, hands, and you're a hitter, it throws you off. And early in the season, he wasn't 100%. And then as we got a month, 5 weeks, 6 weeks into the season, he started feeling better. Well, now his bat speed's picking up. So now he's not having to start his swing as early. But he had a little bit of a funk when he was feeling better because he wasn't letting the ball travel enough because his bat speed was coming back. And I knew Joey, he's hit his whole life. He's been one of the most clutch hitters to ever play at this place, even when he was a pinch hitter. And he does have pull side power. And if you throw him a fastball in the right spot, he can get to it. And, you know, he was able to do that twice, of course, on Saturday in two different games. But I really thought the second one, I'm sure they thought we were bunting and, you know, we were swinging away and he crushed that ball. It was awesome.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Coach, like, you know, it seems like a potential bunting situation. And I know you guys have bunted with JC earlier in the game. So Were you thinking about that at all, or was it you just felt like the, you know, the fastball was a good matchup maybe for, for that?
Well, you had three different innings that that scenario presented itself. So I think we went first and second in the first inning with JC up. We didn't bunt, didn't score. And then I think it was in the third that we had it again and I bunted him, and then Dixon lined out to shortstop, which was a good swing. You just hit it right at somebody, and Dixon did what he was supposed to do. It just was right at the shortstop. So we didn't score that inning. And I don't know why I didn't bunt Joey Barini, but I just had a gut feeling that, hey, Joey's going to get to this heater. Did I think he would hit a home run? I didn't know that, of course, but just had a good feeling about it. And Joey made me look like a really smart man, which I appreciate.
We're talking ECU baseball. Cliff Godwin joining Steve and I go, myself here. Riley Johnson is got a hit streak that's now up to a dozen games. He scored a run in, I think, 10 of those is what I was looking at this morning. But it seems like he's all over the place. He's making plays in the outfield. I don't think anybody's playing as sterling a defensive center field in the conference, maybe even in college baseball, than he is right now. And just continues to be the table setter that you need him to be for this Pirate lineup.
Yeah, I see Coach Forbes' stuff all the time on Vance Honeycutt. I know Vance Honeycutt is a really, really talented player and hits home runs and stuff. But for ECU baseball, Riley Johnson, in my opinion, is our MVP. And Carter Cunningham's having a great year. But what he brings to the table defensively, what he brings to the table offensively, and just puts pressure on the defenses, what he does to get his body ready. He's our MVP because he makes everybody else on the team better. And I appreciate that. And he is tough as nails, which is awesome. I mean, how many people in the country lay out, make a diving catch, the shoulder dislocates, and the trainer and the coach run out there, and he's like, hey, coach, just give me a minute. I just got to move my shoulder around to get it back in there. And I definitely can play defense, but we'll see about swinging, and then we just run off the field. I mean, and he's just been such a spark plug for us all year.
Cliff, with Bristol Carter, he had that entanglement. He's okay, though.
He is. He's feeling good. So, you know, you'll see Bristol back out there for sure. So he just banged his knee into the fence, I guess, which I couldn't see the play live because our dugout's shut out. But that's what he said. And, you know, of course, he was sore that night, but it's gotten better as the weekend's gone on.
You'd talked to us on one of the 18 shows we were doing with you on Mondays, it seemed, last week.
No doubleheader today.
Awesome. No doubleheader today. And talked about then you thought the position players were a little tired and kind of challenged them. And then you made, I guess, a statement to the effect at some point over the weekend, too. It might have been heading into the doubleheader, you thought. But the point is, they seemed to react and were they a little more the position guys into it, you felt like, in games two and three?
No, I did. I mean, you know, specifically, I spoke to JC after Friday night's game, and I said, hey, man, like, you know, you make that play if we're playing Carolina or State. So that's not being totally engaged and having life in your body. And he said, coach, what does that look like? I said, well, when you're sprinting around and you're making plays in the outfield, that means when JC's at his best and our team's at his best, when it looks like you're dragging 50 pounds of weight behind you, that does not look like the guy with energy that can be a spark plug for us. And I thought JC played with as much energy as anybody on our team on Saturday in both games. And I was super proud of him because going into Saturday, I had told him, I said, hey, man, if you look like that, you're not going to play right field both games. So I can tell you that you might DH, but you're not going to play right field because we're going to have some energy on the field. And he was awesome. And I'm sure that their bodies were worn down, but we've done a really good job as a staff this year getting our guys off their feet on a lot of opportunities when we've played on Tuesday. It's been a late game, a long game like it was last Tuesday. I mean, they don't even practice on Wednesday. They get treatment and lift weights. So we've done a good job of that. And then we're able to practice with some of the younger guys that are not getting out there on the field as much. So, but I was super proud of our entire position player group, but specifically JC for the energy he brought on Saturday.
Cliff, I believe you guys are now 10-2 without Jacob Starlin in the lineup, but I know you guys clearly want to get him back. Any update on Star at this point?
He's close. You know, I think there would have probably been an outside shot if we'd have played a normal three-game series that he could have gone on Sunday. The last piece for him, he's swinging pretty much at full speed. but running, he's not full speed running wise yet. So we got to make sure that he's healthy. And it's two different injuries, really, and not to be too specific with it, but one affects it, affects him running more, and one affects him swinging more. Well, the swinging thing is good. Like, we're good with that. But now we've got to be explosive running out of the box, also on defense. And it's very tricky because if we push him too early, then you're talking about, man, it could be set back for another month. And then, man, that's just, you know, not good for him, not good for our team. So we have handled him with gloves a little bit, but he's close. I have not seen him today. I think there's an outside shot he could play tomorrow. I'm not sure if he starts, but he might be able to get in the game tomorrow.
And that game tomorrow with NC State, great game for the Pirates up there in Raleigh a few weeks ago, got the victory, real great approach at the plate, excellent pitching that night, and then NC State comes in, so there's going to be a little extra juice in the building, as you would expect, with the Wolfpack coming to town.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for college baseball. I mean, anytime we play NC State, North Carolina, specifically, our fans come out in droves, which I appreciate. Anytime our guys can play in that kind of atmosphere, it just makes us more prepared for the postseason. And there's no better place than have a place packed in Clark LeClaire Stadium. It's awesome. I said this on social media, but we don't come from behind down 7-0 in game one of the doubleheader if our fans don't get into the game. And they get into the game, and you could just see in the dugout, like, Wichita State's feeling the pressure, which is a good thing. So we need Pirate Nation to be in full force tomorrow night.
And then the next conference series will be at Memphis. They had a coaching change in the offseason. I don't know how much you've maybe looked ahead to Memphis, perhaps not, but anything you can tell us about the Tigers, just kind of looking at the standings and anything that you've seen maybe on film by looking at other teams?
I can tell you that their head coach is Matt Reiser. He has coached at Southeastern Louisiana for a long time. They've done a good job. And the pitching coach is married to a girl that graduated from East Carolina. That's what I can tell you about the Memphis Tigers. So,
all right.
Other than that, I'll worry about Memphis probably starting on Thursday a little bit and really get locked in on Friday.
That's a good note for Scooter to have for the broadcast. The pitching coach married to an ECU girl. So that's a good note for Scooter there. All right, Cliff, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Great stuff. Best of luck against the Pack. And then heading on the road this weekend.
All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Cliff Godwin, thank you. Great stuff there. All right. Let's take it now to Philip the Ref Pilkington with a 94. Well, I tell you what, Pilk, why don't we get a break and then come back with the 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report, and then we'll wrap up the show. How does that sound to you?
Sounds good.
We'll do that. Stay tuned.
Philip Pilkington here with your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. The Pirates moved back into a tie for first place in the American over the weekend after they swept the Wichita State Shockers and got a little help from UAB Friday night when they knocked off UTSA. Two of the three Pirate wins came from behind over the weekend, including on Saturday when their first one, they were down by 7 runs.
Man, in that first game, you get down 7-0, and you know, some of it was self-inflicted, but all 5 runs in the bottom half of the inning came with 2 outs. I thought our guys just battled. Crowd got into it. You could see them, you know, over there in the dugout, they could feel the pressure, and our guys just kept going. And thought Root was great after the 7th spot. He put up 2 zeros, and of course Danny Bill was good, and our guys just kept battling, and I'm just super proud of our guys.
The Pirates will be back in action tomorrow when they take on NC State. You can hear it right here on 94.3. The Game Network coverage will start at 5:45 for that just after 6 o'clock first pitch. Over the weekend, the softball team took 2 out of 3 from South Florida to improve to 9-12 in league play. Not bad considering they started 0-6 in conference play this season. They will be back in action tomorrow at 5 o'clock when they take on UNC in Chapel Hill. To no surprise, Scottie Scheffler won the RBC Heritage Open, which started over the weekend and wrapped up earlier this morning down in Hilton Head. He shot 19 under par, 3 strokes clear of Siyeth Thigala. And in NASCAR, Tyler Reddick grabbed his first win of the season at Talladega after taking the lead coming to the checkered flag on the final lap. He became the seventh different winner this season through 10 races. The Canes will be back in action tonight for game two of the opening round of the Stanley Cup playoffs at 7:30 as they try and take a 2-0 lead over the Islanders in the series after a 3-1 victory in Saturday's opening game. That'll do it for your 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report on the other side of this timeout. We'll be back to wrap up the Patrick Johnson Show.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
Our concert on the Common this week with Craig Woolard and the Embers. Our colleague Craig Woolard be here Sunday evenings on 107.9 WNCT. And Mark Miller will be checking in with us on Thursday. Pilk, you'll be out there? Is that right?
I will.
Dom producing?
Yep, Dom will be in here. Dom will be having fun with you, talking sports, and I'll be getting bit by bugs at concert in the Commons. Bring your bug spray if you want to come out.
Yeah, it's probably a good idea to bring your bug spray. Okay, so Commissioner of the ACC, Jim Phillips, trying to smooth things over, I guess, last month, sat beside the Clemson athletic director during the NCAA tournament. And then would eventually make it to the Elite Eight. Following last year's major realignment, things have gotten prickly, let's just say, in the ACC. Lawyers for FSU and ACC are arguing whether FSU versus ACC lawsuit should be dismissed. This was happening today. The case is one of four that could restrict the ACC's contracts, in the ACC's contracts being invalidated. FSU's lawyers suggesting the judge doesn't have to invalidate the grant of rights. He just has to interpret a clause that says once FSU leaves, the ACC no longer has rights to sell future FSU media rights. The one lawyer asking the judge to just invalidate the withdrawal penalty and have the two parties mediate. So in other words, Florida State wants to negotiate their departure. Judge says he's not ruling against FSU or in favor of the ACC. He's asking FSU to resubmit a complaint that has more specific and clearly stated statement of personal jurisdiction. I'm not ruling against FSU. Judge says that again. Judge also saying that the case is not over. The case will continue. I'm sure the news media will be happy to hear that this means we will have another hearing. The judge, at least the judge seems to have a sense of humor. So FSU essentially wants to have the freedom now in this case that was being heard down in a Florida court today to kind of weave, go back to the bargaining table and come up with their own departure, sort of what Maryland did, kind of came up with their own negotiated departure a few years ago. Interesting. All right. Final few minutes of the show here. Let's hit a pirate report.
Check your text, Patrick. We're having technical difficulties. Sorry.
Oh.
Yeah. We can do the pirate report. Our open has been deleted out of all of our systems.
Ah.
So I'm sending a text out to the powers that be right now. I apologize for that. I promise I did not do it.
All right. Well, let's hear from a couple of ECU players. We already heard from Coach CG. Let's hear from Cam Clonch. Said it felt pretty good to smack a homer.
Yeah, it felt good. I haven't hit one in a little while, but it's just sticking to my plan and sticking to my approach and continue to have confidence in myself, even though I'm not in there every night. Just continue to have confidence in myself, and I know everybody on the bench has confidence in me, so that frees me up when I get to go up to the plate.
I was very happy for Cam Clonch, Pilk, because he's a great guy. And he is handled this not playing in his last year of eligibility like a pro. When asked about how he makes the hard plays look easy, this is what Cam had to say.
Well, I mean, we have one of the best infield coaches in the country, and it's what we do every day. I like to think that we all make those plays every day in practice. So when we make the plays in the game, it's not a surprise. Riley Johnson tonight in center field, he made a couple, I guess you could say, wow catches, but we see that every day. So that's just a credit to the coaching staff and the work we put in every single day.
What Clunch was on with Igo earlier today, is that right?
Yeah, he was.
Did he talk NASCAR?
He did. Talk NASCAR, talked hunting, talked baseball. We solved all the world's problems with Cam today.
What did he reveal his favorite driver or his Henry Hinton said racer?
Yeah, he's
Henry once asked, who's your favorite racer, McGee? Who is his driver?
He likes Ross Chastain, the watermelon man.
Hmm. Bigger problems, NASCAR or golf right now? Because, I mean, like, the golf ratings are down.
I'd say bigger problems, golf.
Do you think so?
Yeah, NASCAR ratings are up a little bit from last year. I think they've at least kind of tapered off in their decline. Like, golf was doing really, really well, and then all of a sudden it was worse than where they were pre-COVID.
Yeah. Sport was in real trouble as a whole pre-COVID. All right, let's hear from Joey Barini on the great week that the bottom of the Pirate order had.
Yeah, we got to pick up some slack. Feels like Carter's been doing the whole year, but yeah, it just shows how deep we are, and when we're all following the plan and stuff, how good we can be.
And he talked about his big hit on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I was just trying to move the baseball. I think it was a 3-2 count, and Luke was running, so I was just trying to move the ball, and lucky he got through got down the first baseline and got a double, and Luke scored.
Let's count it down now and hear some more from Coach Godwin, who we talked to earlier today on the show. Coach Godwin, proud of his team's 4-0 week.
Yeah, well, I'm super proud of our guys. I mean, starting on Tuesday, a 5.5-hour game, and they come out last night, and I thought we still looked a little fatigue off that Tuesday night game last night, except Trey. Trey was outstanding, and then, you know, to get down 7 and come back, and I'm just super proud of the resilience our guys showed.
All right, this is Coach Godwin on one of the guys we just heard from, Cam Clunch.
You know, we put Clunch in just looking for a spark. Bristol, you know, banged his leg up out there. He's fine. But, you know, it's always great to have a senior who's been in our program come off the bench. And Clunch, he deserves all the success. He's been a great teammate, and so happy for him.
All right, let's hear Coach Godwin on Joey Barini, cut 3 on the vast soundbite roster.
His wrist had bothered him a lot early, and it's finally feeling a lot better. And Shaq's tough, man. He's been in our program for a long time, and the guy wants to win. He's super competitive, and I'm so happy for him because he deserves everything he gets.
All right, Coach talked about coming back from down 7 in game 1 of the doubleheader, game 2 of the series on Saturday.
Man, in that first game, you get down 7-0, and, you know, some of it was self-inflicted. But all 5 runs in the bottom half of the inning came with 2 outs. I thought our guys just battled. Crowd got into it. You could see them, you know, over there in the dugout. They could feel the pressure, and our guys just kept going. And thought Root was great after the 7th spot. He put up 2 zeros, and, of course, Danny Beal was good, and our guys just kept battling. And I'm just super proud of our guys.
Glenn talked about Root coming back out after giving up 7 and allowed the team to win both games.
Kind of woke him up a little bit, you know, and it wasn't like they were hitting a ton of balls. They hit a couple home runs. I mean, one was like right down the line, but, you know, for him to go back out there and put 2 zeros, I mean, it allowed us not to just win that game, but the game 2 behind there.
All right, and then let's hear Coach Godwin talk about the Pirate bullpen.
The bullpen was outstanding. Jaden Winter, clean inning. Aaron Groller, 2 clean innings. Jake Hunter, a clean inning. Chris Kaler, a clean inning. And then Schenkman came in and, you know, shut the door. So super proud of all those guys.
You know, I just wonder, had they not had the 14-inning game, I mean, it's kind of a perfect storm for Root to go back out there after allowing those runs. Because you got to think, you know, had there not been the 14-inning game, was it not the first game of a doubleheader, you know, Root may not have had the opportunity to go back out there and his teammates, you know, and he did hold him at bay. I mean, Coach Godwin's right. After the 7 runs, he did shut down Wichita State. But you just wonder if, you know, and that's kind of the funny twists and turns that certain seasons take.
It is. And one of the great things.
Something we usually don't see would have been the case, and it results in the Pirates winning.
No, you're right. And one of the great things was his pitch count was very low, considering he had let up seven runs in three innings that allowed CG to even play that card. But to every point you just made, he doesn't play that card if it wasn't the perfect storm.
Probably not. I don't think he would have. Let's see. Tomorrow we're going to have a lead-in to NC State and East Carolina, which is slated to start at 6:05. It will be a 5:45 airtime here on 94.3 The Game with Scotty Rogers and Coach O. And they'll bring you radio coverage of that game tomorrow night. Pilk will be in for me tomorrow. I'll be out on another TV assignment. And Pilk will have Scotty on and have some other of the day's news for you in a truncated version leading in. I'll be back Wednesday for the rest of the week, and we'll talk about all kinds of things. I'm going to try to get somebody on about this court hearing today that we were just talking about, the ACC. I think that's going to be kind of one of the fascinating storylines of the next several weeks for us here on the show, because I think that that has such a fulcrum. It's such a fulcrum point for where college athletics will go, and to a degree how it really has some impacts on East Carolina. So we'll be watching it with a very close set of eyes. Let's see. Anything else, Pilk, that we have not covered today or brought up or need to make mention of here in the final moment or two of the show?
Not off the top of my head. You hit on the Canes earlier. They got game two tonight, 7:30. Other than that, no, because the Hornets are nowhere near the playoffs, so can't really talk about them.
We mentioned Scottie Scheffler. Nelly Korda won her fifth PGA event in the LPGA event in the row, and it was a major for the LPGA out in Texas. That puts her up there with Sorenstam and Lopez. And if you know anything about women's golf, those are two standard bearers.
They are.
Nelly Korda. Big time. Hey, Pilk, thanks a lot for today, and hold it down tomorrow. I know you'll do a great job. Thanks to Steve and Igo. Thanks to Cliff Godwin. And most of all, thanks to you for tuning in today to the Patrick Johnson Show. Wherever you are listening, wherever you may be watching on our video platforms, we really appreciate it. I'll be out tomorrow, but back in the morning on Talk of the Town, and I'll see you back Wednesday on the Patrick Johnson Show. Pilk will get you ready for the Pack and the Pirates tomorrow in a top 25 matchup. Have a good evening, everybody.